Each weekday, a member of the community is invited to Coffee at KYUK to discuss news and information relevant to Bethel and the Kuskokwim Delta. Sometimes light, sometimes serious, Coffee at KYUK is where our community connects.
It's like a dream come true for me each morning. Grady Deaton coming in and talking with Petra Harpik each morning and getting together around the coffee table. We get excited about all of the plans we have, and we're looking for subsistence hunters and fishers out there that have their activities affected by fuel oil costs and prices. So if you're a subsistence hunter or fisherman, and you want to give us an anecdote about that, please don't hesitate to contact us at coffee@kyuk.org so you can get in the mix on that subsistence reporting that we like from our citizens. And if you have pictures of any of your outdoor activities, we're anxious to see those as well. Before I get started this morning, I want to mention that Smart Fit Girls program with Beverly Hoffman will be here at 9 a.m. to add to our pre-recorded show that airs right before 1 o'clock this afternoon. But here in the studio, I have a reoccurring guest group. Actually, this is their first time in the studio, but AVCP's ICWA representatives have been here before. It's a very important issue. We have a serious call to action. We need foster parents. I'm sitting right now with ICWA advocates Megan Senny, Hazel Keezer, and Francis Bailey. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Oh, it's Bialy. Sorry, Francis.
Good morning.
Good morning. Everyone say good morning a little bit and where you come from, who your parents are, so that everyone out in our listening audience can get to know you a little bit, and so that Petra can set the levels on the microphones. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Good morning. I'm Megan Senny. I grew up in Grand Forks, North Dakota. I was born in Minnesota. My mother is Monique Vondale Rickey, and my father was Paul Dale Senny Senior, and my stepdad is Stuart Rickey. I am a member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. I have been living here in Bethel about 2.5 years, and I moved here after graduating from NDSU or North Dakota State University because my mom was living up here at the time, and then she left, and then I stayed.
Well, yes. Bethel's a great place to stay. Yes. How about yourself?
My name is Hazel Keezer. My parents are Elsie Keezer and Vernon Keezer. My grandparents were David and Lucy McCarr. I'm from Bethel, Alaska. I have a lot of family in this region, and I enjoy being an advocate.
How about yourself?
All right. Good morning. My name is Francis Bialy. I spent most of my life here in Bethel. I grew up here. I spent some of my childhood in Mountain Village with my grandparents, Mary and Johnny Shepherd. My Upa Johnny Shepherd recently passed away a couple of years ago. Rest his soul. I first started working with AVCP back in last year, 2017. I started out as office manager, and then Valerie had mentioned that we needed another advocate, and she really supported me in getting the advocate position, and I appreciate it.
Well, I'm going to tell everyone a little bit about ICWA, but first, I have Azara. She's the marketing and PR person for AVCP, and she's going to introduce herself as well. Azara, you're in the studio. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Azara Mohammadi. I do communications for AVCP, and I started in September. I'm relatively new to Bethel. My one-year anniversary is coming up on the 4th of July. I'm from Fairbanks. I was born there, but I spent a lot of my teenage years and early 20s in California. I moved back to Alaska, went to the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And, yeah, I've really been enjoying doing communication and getting to share all the successes of everyone who works at ABCP, because there are so many different departments and lots of people doing a lot of great work.
And I've been grateful to you for getting us some excellent community reporting, including about this very important and very interesting issue of ICWA. ICWA stands for the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978, and that's fairly recent. In 1978, before the enactment of ICWA, as many as 25% to 35% of all Native American children were being forcibly removed and placed in situations without access to their culture. In some cases, the per capita rate of Indian children in foster care was nearly 16 times higher than the rate for non-Indians. On November 9th of 1978, ICWA was enacted as a federal law, and it governs jurisdiction over the removal of Native American children from their families or homes in order to address the disproportionately high rate of forced removal of Indian children from their homes and from American Indian culture as a whole. Now, I want Megan to touch a little bit on the role that AVCP plays and your group in supporting or enforcing or ensuring that ICWA is honored. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. So our department does a lot of things. Our primary purpose, though, is to ensure that the state is being ICWA compliant when the state removes a child from their home. We do that by consulting with the tribe, making sure that the tribe knows what's going on in the state cases, making sure that the state is placing the children in line with the ICWA preferences, meaning with family first, in a tribally approved foster home, another Native foster home. Just making sure that the child is staying as close to their family and tribe as possible.
How long have you been working for AVCP in this role?
Since December 2016.
All right, and Francis, why is it important to have ICWA advocates?
The ICWA advocate position is a very important job. They correlate between the tribe and the state. They basically are the voice of the tribe. They're voicing their opinions, their needs, and their wants to the state court.
I can imagine it's an honorable calling. Hazel, what are the role of advocates, say, versus the guardian ad litem? And you're going to have to define guardian ad litem for us, too, I think.
Okay. The guardian ad litem is the attorney that represents the individual child or children. The ICWA advocate, once a state custody proceeding starts, we come in and we work with the tribe along with an ALSC, which is the Alaska Legal Service Center attorney, and we represent the tribe in court proceedings. And we also need to be making sure that our children are placed in ICWA compliant homes.
What is an ICWA compliant home?
An ICWA compliant home is a home where the children can continue having their cultural bonds. You say we have the tribe, they're from one of our outlying communities, and we make sure that they are either placed in a relative home or in a Indian home.
Wow. I was looking over some of these history comments that were provided to us from Azara, and I see here that as recently as when the enact was enacted, there's still people alive today who can remember being taken from their homes, sent to boarding schools and orphanages. As a matter of fact, I was interviewing one of the veterans the other day, and his history involved boarding school. So this is something that's fresh in many of our neighbors' minds, the previous status of things. So interesting efforts here. Do you also work on preventing children from being removed from their homes? Is that something that that's something you actively do, right?
Yes. So we do prevention cases, and we also work on tribal cases alongside with our CFSS, our community family support specialists, who are out in the villages and on the ground.
So I think that one of the things that people might make a misconception, they might think that they contact you, but people don't contact you for your advocacy. Your advocacy is instituted or enacted when the case happens, right? You guys are informed of all the cases from OCS, is that right?
Well, yeah, from the state, but we may also be referred, or a family may be referred to us by a community member, or a lot of the times are just because of the communities are so close-knit, they know everybody. Our ICWA CFSS, also known as ICWA workers, may get alerted out in the villages that this family needs some help or needs to be worked with to prevent OCS from becoming involved. And from there, we can work with the CFSS to come up with a case plan for that family, make referrals, and do what we can to prevent the state from becoming involved.
Now, you're going to have to define. CFSS is what I call ICWA worker, right?
Yes.
ICWA worker.
Yeah, they're also known as ICWA workers.
But what does that stand for, CFSS?
Community Family Support Specialists.
Okay. All right, and then here's another question for Francis. What is the difference between, when is a case non-ICWA versus ICWA with OCS cases?
It becomes ICWA when the child of that case has been identified as being a native child or Indian child.
All right, cool. You know, when we had I think it was, what's her name, Valerie?
Mm-hmm.
We had Valerie in and we were talking, and the analogy that we used was something that was more close to home for me. Just, I was impressed in understanding that although obviously supporting the culture that's here is what you do, but you also ensure the tribal rights of natives that live in the area, but like us, aren't from here. I'm Native Chickasaw. So if I was... The example we were using, if my kids were here and for some reason there was an OCS case and for whatever reason Petra was my auntie, my daughter's auntie, you would be the people that would be possibly ensuring that not my needs or desires, but my tribal affiliation rules or whatever are honored. And I think that's...
So we primarily work with the compacted tribes here. Uh-huh. But say, like, you were from a tribe, like, downstate. Mm-hmm. In Wyoming or something, and your child became involved here, your child's tribe downstates would be involved in the state case, so we wouldn't be involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
But if there was a state case up here and they didn't have anyone to act as a local advocate, you actually are the only people that would be able to act on behalf of the tribe on a local level. At least that's the understanding I have. I don't know if I'm entirely right, but Valerie did confirm that with me.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, that's not as relevant to all of our listeners in any way. Let me ask you a question. What made you want to become an advocate?
This is Hazel. Drive is a lot, and it starts with my grandparents. Both my grandparents were placed in my grandmother was placed in an orphanage, so she was not with her family. She was not with growing up around in that setting, and that affected, you know, my mother, and it affected me as far as being really closely tied with my culture, being, you know, one most important, being able to speak the language. My strongest drive is working with our families that are in our region, because I have so many ties. It's important to me that they stay with their families.
Francis, am I correct? Not only the CFSS or tribal ICWA workers, there are people who might train through the RHS program, but also the advocates that you guys are might also study or career path that way. Is that right, or am I not understanding that? Perhaps. I guess it segues to the question of what does your typical day look like? I'm trying to sell younger people on the notion of being advocates like yourselves. Tell me a little bit about your day and sell us on the calling of.
Well, a typical day of an ICWA advocate really starts out as just going through a lot of court paperwork. That's the
keyword was sell it.
Besides all the mountain loads of paperwork that we go through, the greatest thing about it is that we're able to help the families and our tribal members. That's one of the greatest things as an ICWA advocate, I think.
Very cool. We're so short on time. You know, we're about to get off the air, but, you know, as this show, Coffee at KYUK, we focus on two things. We bring in community members to talk about issues and information relative to the community through our people, and then there's our land. We talk about our subsistence activities. And Azara made a good point earlier when we were talking. I don't know if she's available. Azara, you mentioned that this really does tie into our subsistence lifestyle in that we ensure that that goes forward for generations. Why don't you touch on that a little bit before we head out?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Grady. I mean, really, it's just about keeping the children in their area so that they have access to a subsistence lifestyle rather than going, say, to Anchorage or some other place down in the States where they don't have that community and, that lifestyle that's
so
important.
Well, a big call out to foster parents. People who are interested in becoming foster parents should contact the main number for ABCP and ask for the ICWA line, and they can get you in contact with OCS to get into the foster care program. That's about all the time we have for today. Don't forget to be awesome to each other.
Hello, good morning, Bev. Thank you for coming in this morning for our pre-recorded show for this afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Petra. It's good to be here talking about good things in Bethel.
I agree with you. So please introduce yourself and tell me who your parents are.
Okay, Winga Bev Hoffman, Yuchtin Gimuchikta Gigigakflu. My parents were James and Dorothy Hoffman, the late James and Dorothy Hoffman.
Bev, I hear there's a new program in town. Can you tell me what this program is called?
The program, we're very excited about this program, Pedro. It's called Smart Fit Girls. And it's the first time it's being offered in Bethel, and it's for 11 to 14-year-old girls. It is, well, we can talk about the funding later and how it all came about. But, you know, it's a program that teaches adolescent girls at this age how to love their bodies by embracing their own strength. And that, we feel, will improve a lot of those issues young girls face at that age, that they'll be doing so many fun, exciting things and work on self-esteem issues while having fun and learn weight-resistant training.
I already love the sound of this program. I want to ask you, who started this program?
Well, on a national level, it's been around for several years, and it was started by a couple of women that remembered what they felt like as a young girl and some of the issues that they dealt with. And they found that a lot of young girls at these ages, 11, 12, 13, and 14, also are facing some of these body images, self-esteem issues. So they started it. And Kathy Hansen from Bethel heard about it or read about it and thought, we need this program here. And her daughter, Natalie, is one of the top female weight lifters. Maybe the terminology isn't right. Anyway, so we thought we need to bring this program to Bethel. And so she applied for a grant.
Could you tell me what ages can register for this program?
Yeah, we're trying to reach kids. We would love to be able to open it up to all ages, but we had to start somewhere. And it's 11 through 14. Girls who are entering the 6th, 7th, or 8th grade in the fall.
What type of activities will these young girls be engaged in?
Well, there's 3 hours on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2:30 to 5:30. And 1 hour is going to be on strength-building exercises. 1 hour will be on activities to improve self-esteem and body image. And 1 hour is for swimming. And if they don't know how to swim, I think there'll be an opportunity for some swim skill instruction.
This program sounds so much fun. Is there a program for you and I, Bev?
Yeah, I was thinking maybe we needed to have one for women to all ages.
Who is the instructor for this class?
There are going to be several women involved in the training program, but Stacy Reardon at YK Fitness, she's part of YK, the Health Fit Management Team. She's the lead on this. She'll be working with the program and working with the team leaders on Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons.
Is this program free?
You know, that's the exciting part of it. YK Delta Women in Philanthropy put out a grant application period, and that's when Kathy stepped in and we started talking about how cool this would be and let's see if we can make it free. So she applied for the grant and we got it. We were one of several groups that got a grant. It's free.
How far back have you and Kathy talked about this program?
It's just been in the last year. We're both very active. We both work out. You'll see us riding bikes and hiking, and we see the advantage ourselves in our life and our lifestyle. And there's a lot of women that are always working on trying to improve their own, you know, body image, self-esteem issues. It doesn't matter what age you are. So I would say it's a lifetime in progress, always. It's just crazy. I mean, and, you know, both men and women, yeah, we should always be working on improving ourselves and doing good things, right?
Indeed. What do you hope to accomplish, Bev?
Well, I would like to see at the end of the program these girls that are going through this first session, and I really encourage parents out there, get your girls, you know, registered, go over there to the fitness center pool today. But I really hope that they come out of and say, wow, that was really fun, and that they feel so much better about themselves and how they look at themselves. And it just, you know, Smart Fit Girls, and it's on Facebook too, people are curious, or on the net. You can go to their site and see really what they're trying to accomplish nationwide. But I think it's just going to be a real good time for girls, and I encourage parents to talk to them when they come home out of, from these sessions.
I will go home today and talk to my girls about this program and maybe talk them into joining this program. I wanted to ask a question, Bev, but it just slipped my mind.
Oh, now I remember.
Hey, it doesn't get better with age either.
Remind me who to contact to enroll for the Smart Fit Girls program. What are the dates available, when the time start date's available, etc.
Okay, etc. Petra. June 5th to August 9th, every Tuesday and Thursday afternoon, from 2:30 to 5:30. And I again encourage your girls, folks out there, your granddaughters, your nieces, your daughters, get them registered.
What is the class size limit?
You know, I want to say 15 for this initial session, but I could be wrong. And so don't worry, go get them registered. And I wanted to say 15 to 20, but that would be wonderful to have that many in the first session. It's something we want to do every summer.
I hope that all the young girls who join this program have a very, very fun summer. Goyana Dailuten, Bev.
When fuel oils spike every summer and affect our subsistence activities, it begs the question,
why did the price raise this time? How high will they go? What are my neighbors paying up and down the Kuskokwim River? We want to know those questions, so we set forth to answer them.
Petra did some excellent work on gathering that information, and we'd like to share a little bit of that with you now.
Here are various members of our community along the Delta giving us fuel oil price updates so that we can know what our neighbors are paying up and down the Kuskokwim River from Nikolai, Alaska, all the way down to Eek, Alaska.
Hi, how are you doing? Doinda. This is Dan Isai from Nikolai, Alaska. The price we pay for gas up here is $8 a gallon for gas and $8 a gallon for heating oil, like diesel. So, Tina, thank you.
Hi, I'm Bruce Bess from McGrath, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $6.79 per gallon for gasoline and $6.68 per gallon for stove oil.
Hi, I'm David Bobby from Stony River, Alaska. I go to Sleep Need, Alaska and purchase my fuel. I pay $7 a gallon for gasoline, and I pay $8 a gallon for stove oil.
Hi, I am Janine Stuman from Crooked Creek, Alaska. As a resident of Crooked Creek, I pay $6.98 a gallon for gas and $6.35 for stove oil.
Hi, my name is Mark Leary from the Pinewood, Alaska. The price I pay for gas is $6 a gallon.
Hi, I'm Dan Perkins. I'm from Tewapalik, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.50 per gallon for gasoline and $5.35 for stove oil.
Hi, I'm Nathan Underwood from Aniak, Alaska. I pay at the pump $5.23 a gallon for unleaded gas and $5.71 for heating fuel at the pump.
I'm Darren Deacon from Kalskag, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.70 per gallon of gas, and then I also pay $5.70 for a gallon of stove oil.
Hi, this is Willie Pup from Kirksack, Alaska, resident. I pay $5.89 a gallon for gas and $6.32 a gallon for stove oil.
Look, I'm Damian Sigler from Akyak, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.13 per gallon for gasoline and $4.78 per gallon for stove.
Hi, I'm Moselle Alexi from Akyak, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.60 per gallon for gasoline and $5.08 per gallon for stove oil.
My name is Lillian Michael, and I'm calling from Kuskokwim, Alaska. In this village, we pay $5.50 a gallon for gas and $5.83 a gallon for stove oil.
I'm April January from Bethel, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $4.34 per gallon for gas and $5.40 per gallon for home heating fuel.
My name is Sharon Williams from Napaskak, Alaska. We pay $5.50 for a gallon of gas and $6.85 for a gallon of stove oil.
This is Robert Ayagola, resident of Napaskak, Alaska. Our gas price is $5.55 and the stove oil is $4.55.
My name is Martha Nick. I'm from Atmoshok, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.40 per gallon for gas and $5.50 per gallon for stove oil.
I'm Adrian Dubisik from Nunavik, Alaska. As a resident here, I pay $5.15 a gallon for gasoline and $4.86 a gallon for heating fuel.
Hi, my name is Maxine B. Active. I'm from Gasikiluk, Alaska. As a resident, I pay for $5.51 per gallon for gas and $5.15 per gallon for stove oil.
My name is Miranda Lupi from Tutuliak, Alaska. As a resident, I pay for $5.05 per gallon for gas and $4.75 per gallon for home heating fuel.
Hi, my name is Seth Heakin, and I'm from Eek, Alaska. As a resident, I pay $5.50 a gallon for gasoline and $5 a gallon for heating fuel.
Of course, we wanted to reach out to Crowley for comment on this particular topic, and they did forward us some important information that's relative. Here's from Crowley.
While the initial fuel cost is based on the wholesale market price on the date the fuel is purchased from the refinery, there are additional factors that impact the cost of getting the fuel to rural Alaska markets.
Ultimately, it is the sum total of raw product and refining costs,
local fees,
taxes
and regulatory costs,
storage costs,
overhead and marketing costs,
and transportation
and distribution costs that impact the final price of fuel to our customer.
For more than 50 years, Crowley has been responsible for delivering millions of gallons of fuel to Western Alaska communities on an annual basis.
Each year, Crowley is challenged with orchestrating one of the most complicated fuel delivery systems in the nation.
These locations are a long way off the Alaska road system,
situated on the coast or on inland rivers and lakes.
The challenges vary from site to site.
It is a capital-intensive business with a short delivery season dictated by the constraints of bad weather and a harsh operating environment.
Also from Crowley. In the best of times, there is a four-month delivery season for Western Alaska, starting in Bristol Bay and working north.
The Arctic season is even shorter.
Typically, Crowley is able to transfer about 45 million gallons of fuel to its own terminals and its customers' tanks before ice shuts the barging operations down.
The goal is to put enough fuel into inventory to last until the next spring or summer.
This is a sizable investment with carrying costs to Crowley, as the fuel product is sold throughout the winter months. So I'm excited about next week's show, Coffee at KYUK, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We're going to be looking for subsistence hunter and fishermen who have impact statements relative to how fuel prices affect their subsistence activities. More on this topic that's directly related to your subsistence activities as we embark on next week's Coffee at KYUK.